Good to see you. We didn't plan this out, but I don't think we could have planned out our outfits better.
Right.
I think the first time we connected, it was at the height of COVID. And
Yes.
yeah, so this was already a while ago. A lot has happened since then.
Yeah.
And I remember there was some internet troubles, but we caught, you know, I caught little bits, and I love what you shared.
Yes. This June, this past June, I went with my two daughters and one granddaughter to France. And after visiting family and friends in Paris, we went south, more and more south, taking the steps that my family took during the war 83 years ago.
Wow.
To escape the Nazis. And we went to all the places of which I speak in my book, or what of which I speak when I speak to people. And I do a lot of speaking now at the Museum of Tolerance and the Holocaust Museum, and in schools and synagogues and temples or living rooms, wherever I get invited. So we visited all those places and we saw people. We had lunch with people whom I knew during the war, who are all my age, in their 90s or mid-80s. And we saw their descent and they saw mine. And it was just a
wow.
Fabulous journey of memory and discovery, because we discovered a few things that we didn't know about. So it was just a fabulous trip.
Wow, that's incredible. I wonder what, you know, you speak with so many people, you meet so many people, and they want to hear about your life story. I wonder what are maybe some of the questions that come up the most.
I have a PowerPoint presentation.
Okay, sure.
And I usually speak for about 50 minutes, and then it leaves 10 minutes for questions or so, or 15. I mean, it depends if they tell me, well, no, we have to cut after 1 hour. I have this whole thing on PowerPoint. My story of survival, not my whole life, which my book is. My book starts with the first four chapters is my story, our story of survival. And then the rest of the book is my life until now.
So one of the things I was just asking, are there some questions that people ask that come up a lot, that come to mind that you're thinking of?
During the war, I was a child of 10, 12, 11. During the war, what did you feel scared? And I always tell them that we ended up in that little village in the mountains, and my parents did everything they could to have as normal a life as possible for the three children, I being the eldest, and they hid their anguish and their fear from us. And they actually never heard about the Holocaust and what happened in Poland and Germany and Hungary until after the war was over, which is amazing. Wow. My father was listening to the BBC from England, and they spoke in code to the French, and they never talked about the Holocaust, about what was happening in the concentration camps. So my parents did not know what was happening there. So we lived as close to normal a life as possible in a little village. I went to a boys' school, which took a few girls because of the circumstances. My father went on his bicycle every week, three times, to do the round of all the farmers to find food for us, an egg here, half a cup of milk there, etc., enough to feed the family. And he was able to work part-time for his office in Paris, in Lyon, and he was paid part-time by his Gentile boss, to whom we owe a lot of gratitude, so that my father could feed his family. And I see the son of this man whenever I go to Paris. He is now in his mid-80s, and we have dinner together.
Wow.
And I keep in touch with all the, either the people from the war or their children. And they are always touched that we keep coming back and thanking them for what they did for us during the war. Righteous people, not Jewish, who helped us.
Wow, that's incredible. When people hear, do people ask you, like, how do you move through something like this? You're a survivor, but so many people were not. And how do you move through life? How does somebody overcome something like this?
Yeah, personally, I did not suffer a hundredth of what people who went through concentration camps suffered. So I was not really terribly traumatized, except that I came out of the war with a huge inferiority complex. Living in France, which was and still is a fairly anti-Semitic country, and having a slight German accent in my French, because I only spoke German until I was five, until I went to kindergarten. And we just came out of the war against Germans who wanted to kill us. So I felt like a second-class citizen. And fortunately, I've lost that. I grew up with hatred of everything German all my life. I wouldn't go to Germany, buy anything German, not speak the language, nothing. And I finally put it to rest when I started going on the March of the Living, which is an annual trip for Jewish kids 18 years old, just before they graduate from high school, where we go to Poland for a week. We visit concentration camps. We walk out of Auschwitz to Birkenau on Holocaust Day in April, usually in April. And then we go for a week to Israel. And after all the doom and gloom of Poland, which, by the way, is a beautiful country, it's very, very colorful. We always think of Poland as dark, black and white,
right,
and somber, but it's really a very pretty country, pretty flat, very few hills anywhere. But after the doom and gloom of Poland, going through all these, learning about the Holocaust, where it happened, which is an incredible education by itself, we go to Israel for a week, where the sun is shining and the sea is blue, and it's just such a renaissance, rebirth after a week in Poland.
Yeah.
This trip in Poland, for 1 week in Poland with historians and teachers who tell us a lot of stuff, and we visit old cemeteries and we learn about Jewish life before the war in Poland. There were 3.5 million Jews in Poland before the war. And I think they are now about 30,000.
Wow.
But we learn a lot. And that education for 1 week is better than if you sat on a university bench learning about the Holocaust for a year.
Yes,
Auschwitz,
for sure,
is a museum where you see mountains of shoes that they kept, and mountains of eyeglasses and hair. By the way, since you are close by, I strongly recommend to you to go see the Reagan Museum Auschwitz exhibit, which is, it takes 2 or 3 hours to get through there, and it really focuses on life at Auschwitz, and it's unbelievable. People come out of there and they say, oh my God, I had no idea what it was like.
Wow.
So it's, and the museum, it started, I think, in April. It was going to go until mid-August, then it was extended to September, the end of September, and now I think it's been extended to the end of January, because you have to make appointments, an appointment to go, and they are full already, fully booked for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So you have to wait.
Wow.
And make an appointment well ahead of time. But it's very well worth it. You will see things and hear things they are not in all the museums, except maybe the museum in Israel. But the Reagan Library is closer.
Well, I'm actually going to be in Israel next week, so.
Yeah. People ask me, especially the students, when they asked me on that March of the Living, which I've gone on for nine years in a row, they ask me, did you have faith in God, and did you lose it because of the war? And I know that many people who went through concentration camps lost their faith because they blamed God for what the Germans did. And I always tell them that, in my view, I believe that God created us with a healthy body and a healthy mind, and he gave us the power of choice. We as human have a choice. When something is presented to us, we can decide to do good or to do evil. We cannot blame God for that. And if anything, I think God would have wept when he saw what happened in the Holocaust, that his creatures would behave the way they did.
Yeah, I mean, to understand, even with free will, I think people look at it, okay, there's free will, but if there's a God, there has to be put a stop to certain things, like meaning there's nature set up, but then God is limitless and beyond nature. So there has to be times where there's some interference, you know? But yeah, it's one of the mysteries. It's hard to, I don't think anybody has the exact answer. Melech Shlomo, King Solomon, says that Hakol Zelu Matzes, everything is this balance of potential for good or the potential for bad. And out of the darkness can come the greatest light. From the survivors and people that go through these hardships will often bring so much light into the world and so much goodness that comes out of that still, you know?
Yeah.
I remember Rabbi Simon Jacobson, he had spoken at the Light of Infinite Festival around the release of my last book. And he was sharing a story of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Somebody had asked him, you know, how do you not take revenge? Something like the Holocaust happens and you guys aren't taking revenge. And he opened up a book of photos of families and all this. And he started pointing to all the families and the grandchildren and thousands of descendants. And, you know, he said, each one of these photos is our revenge. We take the darkness and we turn it into the greatest light and love and put it out into the world.
Yes.
And that's the biggest.
How can you take revenge when you have lost your father, your mother, your siblings, your cousins, and you are the only survivor? You know, I listen every week when I can. At 1 p.m., there is a Zoom from the Museum of Tolerance with one survivor telling his or her story. It takes an hour or an hour and 5 minutes every Wednesday at 1 on Zoom.
Wow.
And it's really interesting. I've listened to many of the stories. And somebody who wants to learn about the Holocaust has to listen to more than one survivor because each story is slightly different. And survivors have really survived in many. Well, you know much of this, I'm sure. There were many ways to survive. And I only discovered the March of the Living in 2010 because my daughter had heard of it much before that. Long before that, but she thought a survivor was somebody who survived the camps. Whereas the leaders of the March of the Living say a survivor is any Jew who came out of Europe alive after the last war, because we all had to hide or survive somehow by miracle.
Yeah.
Escape being caught. So everybody who came out alive is a survivor. But my story is not as dreadful as many of those stories. And people were either taken in by convents or individual people or sent with a Kinder transport to England and to Holland and also somewhere else. I don't know where at this point. But I count my blessings every single day.
100%. So I wonder, you know, now in this generation, so many people are struggling with anxiety, depression. It's more prevalent now than it seems that it's ever been before. And sometimes when you compare, you know, different parts of history, I mean, right now, some of the people that are struggling the most are people surrounded by so much blessing and so much opportunity and have access to, you know, so much that has not been a part of other people's lives just moving through the day. Why do you think that is, and also maybe something that some wisdom that you could share towards somebody who's just dealing with something? It's so much in their mental state, you know, it's not reflective of necessarily of what's going on around them, but more internally of what's going on inside.
Well, we live in a very unstable world right now, unstable world. That's one thing. But I think also that many people are not using all their faculties to think. Many people take whatever they are told for the truth. And so we are being told many lies. And it's a very, very difficult world right now. And many people believe everything they hear. And they are scared of COVID and of the economy and what is happening with the next election. And people are just scared. What can I say?
So what do you think the answer would be? I mean, it's basically in faith.
Well, I decide for myself. I like to know what's happening. Many people say, oh, I'm not watching the news. I don't want to know anything that's happening. They hide with their head in the sand. I decide I like to keep informed of what's happening, but I will also take it with a grain of salt. I mean, I'm 91 years old. How long will I be here? So stop worrying, Eva. Just live as well as you can. Do good if you can. Speak to people. Do your educating about the Holocaust. And just let things develop. What can I say? I refuse to be worried or to be anxious. I thank God for the blue sky when there are no chemtrails. I thank God for a new day. The sun is shining. California is in bad shape. But what can I do? You know, I just have to live my life.
Right. So it sounds like really just focusing. I mean, you know, bringing in faith and trusting that everything is going to happen as it should.
Yeah.
And B, really, you know, the anxiety, worrying, and all the fear, it doesn't help.
It just makes you sick.
Right.
So I want to stay healthy as long as possible and then die in my sleep. You know, getting old is no fun. And I live in a place where many people, practically everybody walks with a walker. Some are bent over terribly. We have a beautiful, the Fountain View, a senior residence next door to us, where people come and their children, who are now middle-aged, if people are in their 90s, their children are in their 60s, and they come and wheel their parents around our premises, and they don't talk to each other. The person is sitting in the armchair and doesn't talk and is hardly there, kind of almost comatose. And it's so depressing. So thank God I'm already 91, so it won't happen to me very long. But I hope I die suddenly, you know, a good heart attack, and I'll be reunited with my beloved husband, whom I lost Amen. After 32 years of marriage. I believe in that the soul leaves our physical shell and goes back where it came from, and we can reunite with our loved ones. That's what I prefer to believe, because it keeps me happy. Not that I'm in a hurry to find my husband again, but knowing that I will find him again when I do pass away. So that keeps me in good shape.
Yeah. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov always says, never get old. And what that means isn't the age or the physical part. It means that just like you have this beautiful perspective of positivity and hope and this curiosity, this beautiful curiosity that's the element of being young, is staying excited and curious about life.
Yeah.
And when you have that, it doesn't matter what age you are. If you have that in the mental and your perspective, then you're able to still remain youthful. And that's when people are like, oh my God, I couldn't believe, you know, she seems so young. It's like, it's reflective of the attitude and the perspective that you're bringing into anything.
Well, I get along with the students very well because I'm still very young at heart.
Exactly.
I'm still adventurous and I learn new things all the time. I go on Google 10 times a day to look up something that I don't know or don't understand. I keep very busy all the time.
That's great. Yeah, there's, the Friedrich Rebbe, who's one of the Chabad rabbis, used to say, tracht good, the Zion good.
Yeah.
Which is think good and it'll be good. And it's really because you're turning yourself into a vessel for believing that the good is going to happen. So you change your perspective. And I lost my mom a few years ago to cancer.
Oh,
and,
I'm sorry.
And she, the doctors, you know, basically thought she'd have a couple months and that was it, because it was just very, very bad case and nobody could defeat it. But she actually had, you know, I have two kids and we got all that extra time with her, and she got 3 extra years, which, you know, at looking at it from the positive, I was looking at it like, okay, my kids had all these extra memories. You know, one of my kids, he's only 7 now, so he had all these extra memories that he wouldn't have had otherwise. And the doctor said the only way that she, the only explanation that she had all these extra years was just just her attitude. She came in here, she was excited, she was happy, she's saying hi to everybody, the nurses loved her, and this is what kept her and gave her those extra years. The ones that they look at the death sentence and they give up, those are, it's over after that. I mean, you're basically telling your subconscious and your mind and your body that this is it, and you're sealing your own fate. So it's just so important to keep a positive attitude.
The attitude, attitude is super important.
It's wild. I mean, it's tough because when somebody's going through these struggles, it's hard to say, you know, when you're looking from the outside, you're thinking like, oh, if you could just, you know, the law of attraction, if you could just put yourself in a good situation, then you'll actually switch your situation of things maybe not working out to switching it into a space of welcoming things to work out and attracting those things. But when you're stuck in it, it's very, very hard. We're sort of doing it to ourselves so much of the time.
And also living with gratitude is so important. So many people, this changes the students, by the way, when they go on that march and they come back 2 weeks later. And after viewing everything and everything they did in Poland and in Israel, they come back and they say, I'm never going to quarrel with my friends anymore about trivial things. It's stupid. We should be so grateful for the life we have here in the United States still.
It gives perspective.
Yeah.
For sure, it gives perspective.
How many children do you have?
I have two. I have one just had a bar mitzvah last week, actually. So he's 13.
Oh.
And then my other is seven. Thank you. Yeah, it's so wild to think that I have a bar mitzvah kid.
Yeah. What does your wife do?
So my ex-wife, their mom, she's a food blogger, a cooking food blogger. She's talented with food. She does recipe development and films and photographs and all these different things.
And you?
And I do a bunch of different things. I'm involved in design, both graphic and web. Oh. And then I used to have an art gallery. I do a lot of music. And now with these books, I'm pretty busy with the book series.
Nice. You have an art gallery or you are going to?
I had one for 6 years. Wow. I got rid of it. It happened to be right before COVID. It actually worked out.
Oh, I see.
Timing wise.
That was good. That was lucky.
Yeah, it was kind of the time. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing having a gallery, just working, curating these shows and doing these openings. You bring in so many different people and you're curating so much different art, creating sort of a universe in the space and welcoming people into the world and just where the person's at as an artist. It's always been a big passion of mine.
How did we meet?
I think it was, I think it was through Clubhouse originally.
Oh, Dorothy, what's her last name? Dorothy.
I can't remember. I mean, it was a long time ago. I think Clubhouse kind of happened at this time where nobody was meeting, and it was like the perfect timing to launch his audio app.
Oh, during that trip, we found the castle where we lived in 1940. Can you imagine? 83 years ago. It was always in my mind, in my memory. We lived in a castle for 10 months or so. And so the son of my father's boss, who is now in his 80s, gave us an old picture taken in 1940 of the people who lived in the castle at the same time that we were there. And all we saw were three windows above their heads and a bit of a tower on the left. So we went to that tiny little village in France, which only had one restaurant, to show you how small it was. Right. We went to that tiny city hall, and I asked the girl behind the desk, who must have been born in maybe 2000, I showed her my picture, and I said, I lived in this castle when I was 8 years old in 1940, and we are looking for this castle now. And she looked at me like I was from Mars or something. And then she called a guy whose hobby it is to write the history of that place. And he came within 10 minutes. I mean, he wasn't far. And he went with us across the street to what they thought maybe was it. And they built an old age home behind it, beyond a big field. And so we went to the old age home, and the secretary to whom I showed my picture said, yeah, this is the structure across the field, but it's empty and it's locked. So our friend, the man who came with us, said, well, let's go around and see at least if we can find that yard where the picture was taken. And we waded through the high grasses and very uneven ground. I was afraid that one of us would twist an ankle, but nothing happened, thank goodness. And we arrived around the corner, around the building, to that yard. And we saw the three windows and the...
Wow.
It was amazing. I was absolutely thrilled because for a few months ago, I started thinking, was it really a castle? It's in my memory as a castle, but what did I know? I was 8 years old. But it is. It is a castle. And it's completely, it is left to die for the time being. The present owner wants to make it into apartments. It has 10 or 20 rooms. It's a big place. But the tiled floors have all been taken out, and you walk on like sand. And it's completely abandoned. It looks totally abandoned. And when we went there around and we were still talking with the man, and suddenly my granddaughter said, it's open. She found a door.
Oh my gosh.
We went in and visited the inside. Yeah.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. Then we went to Lyon, where my mother just escaped by miracle being caught by the Germans on her way to the station, to the railway station. And then we ended our trip in a little village in the mountains where we ended up until the end of the war. And we had lunch with the daughters of our former landlord and landlady.
Wow.
One is 91 and the other one is going to be 100 in October. She was 20 at the time. So, and we had lunch with them.
Oh my gosh.
We saw the area where my mother had her bicycle accident that was totally God sent and saved her life, because if she hadn't had that accident, which stopped her in her tracks with her bicycle, she would have gone straight into German lines further down, and she would have been caught by the Nazis with men's clothing on her bicycle. She would have been taken for a resistance woman and shot right away.
Wow.
So many miracles in my life.
Yeah.
Something long before I was born, it suddenly occurred to me a few weeks ago. My paternal grandmother had four children, four babies, and only my father survived infancy. All three others died. Why did my father survive? If he hadn't, I wouldn't be here.
It's wild.
It's
absolutely
amazing.
Sometimes you could see, you know, there she saw immediately, you know, the bad thing that happened, and then immediately that it saved her. So often in life, we don't really see what we're being saved from, you know, something bad's happening, and then, or that it's going to help us further down the line. And we don't really have that opportunity. We just have to trust that this is for the best, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
Sometimes
that's what we can do.
Sometimes I think of this example, let's say you're somewhere for dinner and you're out, and then you see like only like narrowly in toward the kitchen, and you see, you know, the father smacking the kid off of a chair or something, and the kid falls.
Yeah.
But if you were to zoom out, if you saw like what he's seeing, maybe the kid was about to put his hand in fire or whatever, and he was saving him from being lit up. So that's how it is so much, you know, we're about to do this or something's going to happen. And something bad, we feel that it's bad, but it's really, we're being saved from something worse.
Yeah, we cannot always judge by appearances.
We have to trust that if we were zooming out, or we were seeing, you know, from higher up, like sometimes we're stuck in the ditch or whatever on the ground, and we can't really see very far. But if we were able to get higher ground, we could see the past and the future and what exactly is happening, you know?
Yeah. And also, I like to laugh, and I like to make people laugh. That's a big part of me, which doesn't come out usually when I speak to people, but I love to tell jokes and to make people laugh. And I laugh just as much at my jokes as they do.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. No, it's great. Well, thanks so much for taking the time. It's always great to be able to talk to you and catch up with you.
Well, you are welcome, Erez. It's nice talking with you too. Thank you. Cool. Yesterday, I was invited by a Chabad in Moor Park to go and speak to them on October 18th. Yeah.
Nice. Well, let me know if that happens. I'd love to come to that.
Well, thank you. And I also speak very, very often at the Museum of the of Tolerance and the Holocaust Museum. I haven't spoken there lately, but I speak all the time at the Museum of Tolerance. They seem to like me and call me often.
Okay, so let me know the next time. That's easy.
Okay, so let me wish you a happy and a sweet and peaceful new year and a lot of success in your professional life and a lot of good health and happiness for you and your family.
Yeah, I want to wish you the same, Shana Tova. You should continue to spread the light and to have this youthful, beautiful spirit and perspective be filled with joy and laughter. And thank you so much, Shana Tova.
Thank you very much, Erez.
Much love.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.